The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I am Dr. Josh Klapo. And today we've got an incredibly tough topic. Obviously, it's one that the world is watching. And Alex, when you proposed talking about Ukraine, to be honest with you, I was like, I don't even know what we say. And this is where you're just you. This is your thing. I mean, here's why I didn't know what we should be talking about, because obviously there's the humanitarian crisis. I mean, that's what we all are watching, you know, and I think it's even difficult, at least for me, to think about in any great detail the business processes, the logistics and the supply chains and all those sort of things. And I think what you're going to tell us is you have to, that while we've seen the humanitarian crisis and we're seeing the people and their lives destroyed, there is and there are obviously business logistics. Is that kind of where we're going? Is it just that I'm shying away from it because I'm only looking at sort of the front and center human side?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, Dr. Josh, the real key to this one is that, you know, we talk about a lot of topics on this show, and we go through a wide variety of business topics, and we try to bring those together by talking about sort of things that we've done in the past in our careers, things that we've seen organizations do, as well as, you know, try to bring in the classic rock angle of it to try to create some parallels there. And I think this gives us a really interesting opportunity to take a current event, a real world event, where the eyes of the world are on this event. And I think there's some things we can learn from it. I think there are some ideas that are you know, and events that are happening that give us the ability to kind of retrospect in real time, or introspect in real time, if you will, on really what's happening over there and what can we learn from it? What can we take away from what's going on? And I think the human side of it is maybe the most important angle of the whole thing. You know, I mean, everybody, and I think we all do this, right? I think if you've never been in a war, and I certainly haven't, but what I've noticed is that it's very hard to understand the human impact of something like this. Kind of sitting and watching the news or sitting around and theorizing about it. And then in this particular situation, we've really got, for lack of a better term, the first real-time conflict where, you know, everybody's posting things. We're seeing close to real-time video getting posted on social media. We're seeing live news reports. I mean, we've had some of that in the past, but I think this is really the first sort of big conflict that we've seen where the eyes of the world are truly on this thing. And I think people are starting to come to grips with the human side of it, the human toll that gets taken in these sorts of conflicts. So I think there's a lot we can learn from the human side of this. It also touches on a lot of topics that we've talked about, things like leadership, you know, supply chain issues. There's certainly going to be big supply chain issues as a result of this conflict. There are, you know, topics around censorship. We're seeing a lot of censorship on both sides happening in this conflict. And then I think ultimately this idea of adaptability, this is the maybe the perfect example of, you know, countries and organizations. And it goes beyond just the governments, right? It is truly a real-time reaction to what's happening and real-time adaptation to what's happening in this conflict. And I think there's a lot we can learn from that as well. So I think it's, you know, we don't want to get too controversial on this show. We don't want to spend too much time talking about politics and things like that. But I think it does give us a great opportunity to kind of talk through some of those issues.
Well, you've mentioned, I know you've talked about geopolitics a lot, and the impact of geopolitics on business. And I was listening, for example, today, a report talking about the space station, and that we're in partnership with Russia. And there was a comment about what's going to happen up there. Are they going to, you know, how are the cosmonaut and the astronauts going to get along? And again, I'm almost not tracking with you, to be honest. Help me dig deeper into the business part of it, because the humanitarian piece, so we've got food and shelter and first aid and evacuations and those kinds of things, to tie it into the business operations, or is, because I'm struggling. I really am struggling on how we bring that. Well, I'm struggling on how we bring that front and center. Like, what is needed now? What should we be thinking about now? What should they be thinking about now beyond sort of direct military considerations?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things this conflict teaches us is, well, there's a million things I can think of, right? But one of them is just how important the human aspect to all of this is. You know, you see Russia invading with, you know, close to 200,000 troops. And I've seen some interesting things come about as a result of this, right? One of them is, at least a fair number of those Russian troops don't want to be there any more than anybody else, right? They have no desire to participate in this thing. And as a result, we're seeing a lot of, you know, things like even like self-sabotage of their vehicles. You know, they had this huge armored convoy that was like 40 miles long, and it was headed for Kiev. And it's taken them days and days and days to get there when they should have been able to get there in a matter of hours. And I think the part of that problem is that it's the human side. It's not the necessarily the equipment, although the equipment is in pretty shoddy shape. But it's the human aspect of it. People don't want to be there. And so you've got on one side a bunch of troops that don't want to be there. And I've seen some of the posts that some of these Russian people have sent to their mothers and things like that. Like, wait a minute, this was not what this was advertised. We were supposed to be liberators, and now we're shelling civilians. So you see the human aspect of that. So on one side, you have a very unmotivated organization, right? You have a very unmotivated army for good reasons, right? No one would want to be there. None of us would want to be there on that side of the conflict. And then on the other side, though, you see the power of the human spirit. You see the power of motivation. You see the power of great leadership. And I think that that Zelensky has done just an amazing job of rallying his people, right? And being able to go out and say, I don't need a lift. I need more bullets, man. I need more ammo. And what's interesting about that, and I think it touches on a topic we hit on a few weeks ago, was this idea that, you know, can the same types of leaders that brought you to a certain point in your company be the same types of leaders that scale the company going forward, right? A lot of companies start with innovators, and they start with these mavericks. Mm-hmm. And at some point, in a lot of cases, they get to the point where you go, you know, the skill set needed to run a conflict like this, right? To run a revolution or whatever it is very different than the skill set you need to govern in a steady state environment. So I think Zelensky, you know, I was reading something from some of the other ministers of parliament, and one of the women said, you know what, normally I criticize this guy like every single day,
right?
But you know, he's become this amazing leader, and he stood up, and he's got courage, and he's got charisma, and he's leading the people in their fight for freedom. And so I think that's an interesting thing we can learn from a business standpoint, is that the human element, the motivation of people, can make all the difference, not just in a war, but in business and in every aspect of life, right? It's all about your attitude. The Russians have come in, they've got people that aren't motivated. They've got people that are saying, why the heck are we here? They're sabotaging their own equipment, so on and so forth, because they don't want to be in a war any more than the Ukrainians want to be in a war. But then on the other side, you've got some amazing leadership that stood up and said, hey, we're not going to go quietly here. We're going to fight to the death. We're going to take up arms, and we're going to defend our country. And so the stark difference in leadership shows you how important leadership is, not just in governments, but in business and in other organizations as well. Just how stark of a contrast there is between those leadership styles.
So with the... at the risk of actually sounding a little callous, but I'm not, and I want to take it here. Can you even expect in non war times and in a situation where it is not life or death, can we ever expect? I guess you should be asking me this question as a psychologist, but the most powerful leaders in business, the ones who are the most inspirational, whose people, whose employees would follow them and do whatever they want. Can you ever expect that as just a human being that you're ever going to go that far? You know, sacrifice your salaries, don't get paid. Actually, now I'm thinking about early startups. I guess that happens. But, you know, I feel like there's a difference here. Zelensky is literally asking people, and they're willingly doing it, to put their life on the line. That doesn't happen in business, right? It in the military, but it doesn't happen.
Well,
in business.
I don't know. I don't know. Let's think about it, right? Okay. I mean, we've had this global pandemic going on for 2 years, and we've had some amazing healthcare professionals
That's
putting
true.
Their lives on the line every single day. Right. So I think that, yeah, I think there are examples in the business world and in other organizations where we're asking people to do hard things. Whenever we go through recessions, whenever we go through, you know, difficult economic times, or companies go through difficult times, you know, the style of leadership has to reflect that. You know, it's the way that you run a company when things are going really, really well. It's very different than the way you run a company and lead a company when things aren't going well. And I think it's the two different styles of leadership. And sometimes you need a leadership style that's very, you know, focused on growth, and it's focused on innovation, and it's focused on, we're going to do these amazing things. But let's face it, just about every company out there goes through lean times as well. They go through tough times. And it's in those tough times that you find sometimes those great visionary leaders maybe aren't the best leaders to take you through the difficult times. And I think Zelensky's a really interesting example, right? I mean, this guy, his qualifications for being president of the Ukraine were actor and stand-up comedian. And I hear he's pretty funny. I don't speak Ukrainian, so I can only see the translations. But, you know, he's a guy that you look at and you would say, if you were a betting man, would you have said that an actor and stand-up comedian could become this amazing focal point and this amazing leader for rallying his people and getting them all on the same page and creating this unity within the country? And I think most people probably would have said, nah, probably not. But he stepped up to the plate, and he's going through arguably the toughest time you can possibly go through as any kind of government or organization. Your very existence is threatened. And he stood up and risen to the challenge. And not everybody does, though. So I think that being able to understand that, if we take that and put it into a business context, you know, understanding the type of leadership you need and the style of leadership you need based on where your company is at, whether you're going through a crisis or you're going through really good booming times or what have you, I think one of the things we can take away from that is that, you know, what you really want are flexible leaders. You want people that can do well in multiple circumstances from a long-term standpoint. And Zelensky's proven he's a pretty good leader from a political standpoint, but an amazing leader in a crisis. And I don't think most of us would have necessarily expected that before this conflict started.
Do you think, so when we get down, we know that when we are pushing people to their limit, we put them in the most critical times, whether it's life or death or not, there's always a combination of two things. One, there is tactical or content knowledge. You kind of need to know what you're doing. Then there's the other piece, which is how do you connect with the people on your team, who are working for you or with you, so that you're tapping into their crisis mode and you're not pushing them away. And again, I've seen it, you know, you see in companies, sometimes the iron fist leader who says, you know, join with us or move over to the side and leave, that kind of thing. When you think about a Zelensky, or you think about a leader in a business in times of crisis, how important is the content and tactical versus literally being able to get people to go in the same direction? I know you need both. I mean, that's the easy answer. So I'm going to ask you the harder answer, which is more important.
Well, I mean, I think it comes, it's a great question, and it kind of illustrates the difference between leadership and management. And a lot of people conflate those terms, you know.
Yes.
Management is all about the tactical stuff, right? It's all about the day to day. It's all about the, you know, making sure that things are operating smoothly, that things are going well, so on and so forth. And then there's leadership, which is really, I think, a lot about inspiring people to do their best and inspiring people to do things that they didn't necessarily think they could do. Again, you know, there was another minister of parliament. I may have been the same woman. You know, that was said, you know, I criticize this guy all the time in normal circumstances. But she said, you know, I've just gotten trained up today on how to use an AK-47. And if you had come to me a week ago or 2 weeks ago and said, hey, we need you to potentially go out there and fight with an assault rifle, she would have said, no way, that's crazy. So I think, you know, I think one of the things that crises bring out is they bring out people that are true leaders. They may not be the best managers in the world, but it brings out, I think, unexpected leadership characteristics in people when you go through a crisis. And I think it's hard to predict in advance who those people are going to be. And I don't know if there's psychological tests you can give people to see how well they handle a crisis. But, you know, Zelensky has just done an amazing job of stepping up to this crisis. It's almost like he came into his own element, right? Like this is what he was born to do. When he talks, you're just like, you know, you're thinking Winston Churchill. You're thinking some of the great true leaders of the past. Whether he's a good manager, I don't know, but I'm definitely convinced he's a good leader. And I think that it's hard to find people who are good at both. It's hard to find people that are truly inspirational leaders that can really take an organization or a government or whatever it is you're dealing with forward with a vision and motivate people. And also at the same time, be really, really good at managing the whole process. That I think that's a hard ask. I think you're looking for people that are fairly rare in that regard.
So let's drill down on that a little bit and not so much to pivot away from Ukraine, but you bring up a really good topic that I see a lot, this conflating sort of a manager versus leader. And on the one hand, you know, I spend a lot of time talking with sort of newly found leaders, people who were managers and now put in leadership position. And they're scrambling to kind of, if you will, get everything done. And I have to, you know, I tell them all the time, look, by the definition of your job, the way you are positioned now, you can't get everything done. It was designed in your job not to get everything done. That's why they gave you people to work with you, right? And so that the idea is you have to be able to let go enough and trust and develop other people so that they get things done, so that as a team, you get things done. But that being said, I want to ask you this. A lot of times we sort of say that, you know, managers are different than leaders, but I really believe that anybody can lead, right? Anybody has the potential to lead. It doesn't matter your ranking, if you will. And what are your thoughts about that? You know, so the person who's at the lowest level of an organization versus the person at the highest level of the organization, leadership itself doesn't have to be tied to your ranking. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, that's one of the things we really try to emphasize to everybody that works at Adaptigent. When we have all hands calls, when we have staff meetings, when we have departmental meetings, the idea that anybody can stand up and say, hey, you know what, I don't think this is a good idea. Or conversely, they can stand up with a brand new idea that maybe changes the way we think or changes the paradigm of what we're doing. If you don't encourage that, then you're going to miss out on those leaders, the people that can actually lead. And they may be young, they may be new, they may be inexperienced relative to other people. But, you know, what you find is good ideas can come from anywhere. And great leaders can come from, you know, any part of your business. And so I don't think of leadership. And in fact, I think in a lot of companies, What a lot of companies do is they emphasize the management aspect of it, right? They promote people based on how well they've run a particular business or a particular department or whatever from an operational standpoint. And if you do that over and over again, you find that, oh man, I've got a bunch of executors. I've got a bunch of people that know how to go out and run the business in its steady state environment really, really well. But nobody at the top is one of those natural leaders and innovators and thinking outside the box kind of people, almost by definition. So I think organizations, again, whether you're talking about companies or you're talking about the military, you're talking about the government or whatever, you end up with people who have demonstrated their competence in running the more management side of the business. And we promote people in large part based on those things. And if we don't also look for the innovators and the leaders, the visionaries, the people that can motivate others, if we don't also make that at least an equally rated criterion for advancement within the organization, you end up with an organization that's, you know, great at executing on what you're doing today. But when the world changes, and the world will change, I don't care what industry you're in, the world will change. Your ability to adapt to that world, I think, is limited. And I think we've seen that over the years, over and over and over again. Companies that were really well run. I mean, take GE as a good example of this.
Yes.
GE, one of the best run companies in the world. Jack Welch, you know, I mean, brilliant guy, brilliant at going out there and executing on the business plan and doing what needed to get done to make that happen. But then it kind of fell apart, though, when the world changed around the company. They weren't able to adapt as quickly as they needed to. And they went through some really, really tough times a few years back, really hard times.
Okay, so can we talk about Six Sigma? Because Six Sigma is such a good, I'm going to vent. You can be my therapist now.
Sure.
Six Sigma to me was the most amazing idea. And if you will, I don't even know how to say, I got to be careful about how to say this. The dumbest generalization that I'd ever seen. And the reason I say that is, you know, the idea of Six Sigma, when you're talking about creating parts and parts and pieces and errors around parts and pieces and tangible objects, it totally made sense to me. But I don't, I'm sure you remember this. Six Sigma became this thing in business. And you saw Six Sigma around people error and communications. We saw Six Sigma in, I spent a ton of time looking at Six Sigma in medicine and physician errors. And it was this idea that it almost felt like this idea, like we can remove the variables that have to do with human communication, emotions, all the things, because we took it from sort of an assembly line mentality and it just ran with it because it felt like, oh, this is going to be great. Because, and the reason I'm saying this, Alex, is it almost felt like all those leadership skills, which are difficult to quantify, they're not intangible, but it's so much easier to say, you know, have you hit these performance indicators? And I just wonder if that whole approach is why we see management, if you will, dominating, because people don't know how to quantify what leadership is, even though it's possible. That was a lot, but what are your thoughts about that?
No, look, I completely agree with you. I mean, I think the Six Sigma thing got completely out of hand. And I think it's partially because people looked at it as a philosophy, and some people looked at it almost like a religion.
Yes.
You know, like they had this fervor around it, right? You've got to measure everything. And there were all these books back in the 80s and 90s talking about, well, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it, and blah, 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 blah. And look, I mean, I think that you have to recognize those things for what they are. They're tools. They're no more than that. They're no more or no less than a tool. And if you look at them as a tool that you can apply to specific circumstances, like manufacturing or like quality initiatives and whatnot, then you can actually effectively use those things. But when they become sort of this overarching philosophy, when they become the religion, I mean, I've worked for companies where, you know, everything was a metric. If you couldn't measure it, we don't care about it. If you can't quantify it, it's not real. And we know that's not true. We know that it isn't true because metrics are always, and I mean always, they are imperfect views of reality. They give you a snapshot.
Oh, you're getting super PhD on me. You're getting
validity. Well, let me give you a really good example. Okay. You know, if you look at the last 100 years, life expectancy has increased dramatically. Mm-hmm. All across the world, but particularly in wealthy nations that are sort of whatever you want to call them, first world nations, dramatic life expectancy increases. We've gone from, you know, I think it's gone up by like 10 or 15 years. And you think to yourself, wow, you know, that's pretty amazing. All this technology and all this stuff that we've been able to do to extend the human lifespan. And so you look at that number and you say, okay, you know, median lifespan has gone up by 10 years or whatever it's been, or 15 years over the last 100 or 120 years. And if you look at that metric, you get one view of reality. Now, the actual reality when you start looking at other metrics is that 80% of that lifespan increase has come from doing a better job of keeping children alive during childbirth and the first couple of years of their lives, right?
That's right.
Kids were dying in droves 100 years ago compared to today. So when you average in a bunch of zeros and ones into a statistic or a metric, you get a much lower number. If you take out all those zeros and ones, now you get a much higher average. So you can use metrics, but you have to be very careful to understand that they're almost never perfect representations of reality. And you've got to look at the next level down. You've got to dig down and actually understand what those things mean. Another really good example, I was watching a TED talk not long ago, and it was on this very topic. And they were talking about pies in the United States, fruit pies. And, you know, they went out and surveyed everybody, you know, what's your favorite pie? Or actually what they did was they looked at the number of pies purchased at grocery stores. And they found out that apple pie was the number one best-selling pie in the country. And there wasn't even a close second. And then they went out, though, when the grocery stores and the companies started making these individually sized pies that you could just eat by yourself, these little guys, right? They went out and then looked at the sales data for those individual pies, and they found out apple pie was like third place. And so apple pie is not America's favorite pie, as it turns out. It turns out it's mixed berry, but apple pie is like the least offensive pie that you're going to eat with a group of people. So you, again, you look at a statistic like, well, apple pie is number one. We should just keep making more apple pies. But it turns out that when you get down to the individual level versus the group level, you find out the data is totally different. And so you've got to be able to do that when you're running a business. And you've got to be able to look at the depth and understand the context of the data and the metrics that you're trying to track. Otherwise, you end up in a situation where you're drawing some very misleading conclusions.
So, all right. So I agree with you. I agree with you completely. I'm biased because that's sort of where I lean. And I'm a big proponent of what I call behavioral and psychological KPIs, right? So usually it gets thrown into, it's that touchy-feely stuff. So, you know, Zelensky is amazing because he's inspiring and we can't really quantify it and it's intangible. And so, you know, it's great, but we really can't rely on it. We can't teach it. It's just there. Well, we know from all of the leadership research training that you can teach people and you can look at people's communication styles and their frequency of how they interact and the number of times they engage in a personal or difficult conversation. I work with one company that talks about connected conversations between employees and their management. And all the connected conversations are done electronically. It's not a real conversation. And so I guess it feels like it's easier to look at a Zelensky or look at a great leader and say, well, they're inspirational. So we can't unpack that, you know, but we can unpack, you know, how many widgets we'll make. And how many times a sales team met their mark. But if you think about it, the number of times a sales team met a mark probably has everything to do with communication and communication skills and conflict resolution and all those sorts of things that's how they met their mark. I mean, again, so go back to Zelensky, you know, we're seeing this inspirational guy, but he's clearly got a set of tangible leadership skills, from communication to empathy to consideration of other people's thoughts, feelings, etc. What's your thought? Is that, again, you're the president of a freaking software company. You're supposed to be as like untouchy-feely as you can imagine. But what's your thought on that?
No, look, I mean, I think the interesting part about Zelensky, right, is that, you know, we would initially think, well, how good of a former actor and stand-up comedian could he be as a leader? And I think, you know, in looking at it more closely, those are the very types of skills that he needed to be a leader, right? Someone that could get up there and speak well, someone who could understand the audience, who could understand the context of what they're doing. I mean, you probably can't find a job in the world that tunes you more into an audience and what they're thinking in real time than stand-up comedy. You know,
absolutely.
Yes. Like an amazing skill set to have to be one of those inspirational leaders, because in stand-up comedy, you're out there and you're reading the audience, you're telling jokes, you're modifying things almost in real time to suit the audience that you're dealing with. And so I think you're right. I think there are ways of measuring leadership characteristics, for sure. People have been trying to do it for ages now. And I think that's a valid pursuit. I think, though, that there are intangible factors. There are factors that aren't easily measurable. And to ignore those, that's where people get in trouble, right? They think the metrics or the measurements or whatever are the only thing that matters. I'm not saying they're not important. They're really, really important. But if you take out the, you know, any recognition that there are intangible factors, then you get yourself in trouble. Again, you could go look at this invasion of the Ukraine and you could say, well, the Russians had 200,000 troops. They have this many tanks. They have this many mortars, so on and so forth. And then look at the Ukrainian military and say, well, they have like a tenth of what the Russians have. But the reality is the intangible factors, the motivation, the leadership, the just the drive and the grit to fight for freedom and fight for their country, that's a factor that I don't think anybody really factored in before this thing started. And it's turning out to be one of maybe the most important factors. So, again, I think you have to look at these things and have a strong mix, but you can't ignore the intangibles. You can't ignore the things that you can't necessarily easily measure when you're dealing with a crisis, or you're running a company, or you're running a government or a nonprofit. I think it all matters. And what I think we've seen over the last 20 or 30 years is a very pernicious trend to just say, and there are plenty of, you know, great business books that say this, well, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And I think that's BS, honestly. I think that is just a stick your head in the sand kind of business philosophy that doesn't make sense. Now, again, maybe if you're a manufacturer, maybe that's true. But we found that innovation and inspiration and vision are what separate the great companies from the good companies. And I think they're the things that separate a great leader like Zelensky from take the president of Afghanistan, right? When the U.S. troops said they were going to withdraw, he just hightailed it out of there. So you can see this stark contrast between leadership styles and the difference it can make when you're dealing with any type of organization.
Such an important topic. You did what I didn't think you were going to be able to do, and you did do it. You brought it through the business part. You brought it all the way back to the humanitarian piece. And you gave us a little bit of a broader perspective. We are out of time today. You know, it's trite to say our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Ukraine, but they are. And I hope that at least today, as this podcast will end up living on after it's live, it will live on forever and ever. It's a marker of kind of what you were saying, that intersection between the human condition and it relates to business. So great insights today, Alex. For everyone, thank you for joining us today on Adapter Parish. You need to stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, because there's going to be another amazing episode of Adapt or perish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.